Wait, we need to pause for a second. I have a really important question.
Okay.
Ash, are you recording?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I have been. 26 minutes.
Disaster averted. Anyways, back to what we were doing.
Hold up. Drop that new theme song.
Also known as Big Giant Circles. Jimmy was one of the composers of Mass Effect 2, and he was awesome enough to provide us with our new intro track, and we are beyond excited to share it with you all, guys.
I can't believe we kept it a secret this long.
I know, it's awesome. It's awesome.
It is, yeah. It's been
we had it for the wife swap, right? And Ash wanted to come on, and that's what we said no about.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, so we're beyond excited to actually have this song, and he was incredibly generous with it, so... Thank you, Jimmy Hinson, Big Giant Circles. We'll probably play the entire track at the end if you want to hear
yes.
the whole thing. It's in its entirety. So,
okay,
cool. So, how are you guys? We're back from our wife swap episode, and we're here for Rated NA episode 61. And it's time to party.
I know.
Party.
I have to tell the tale of Ryan because every time Ryan comes on the podcast, he always. After the podcast is over, always texts me an apology for some reason. He always thinks he does horribly. He always, like, every time he's like, I'm so sorry I was so loud, or sorry I talked so much, or sorry I laughed too much, or whatever it is. And this time he finished it, and, like, I didn't get a text message, and I was totally amazed. And the next day I was hanging out with Melissa, and I get a text message from Ryan. It just said, sorry I was so awesome on the podcast this week.
I thought he was quite good. I think he did an admirable job.
I had an absolute blast. I thought Anna was awesome. I thought having Ryan back was great. So,
yeah.
And you guys did a great job on Press to Reset too. I loved it.
Why? Thank you. It was a lot of fun. They are a really good group, and I honestly feel like when all of us were in our pods growing up, that our pods were separated, and we may have been, you know, kind of born from the same DNA. If that makes any sense.
I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
No, I think they're a great group, and I'm really happy that we have become buddies with them. So,
yeah.
For those of you that didn't get a chance to go listen, head over to Press to Reset and check out our Wife Swap episode over there, because Hillary and I were over there for an episode, and of course Anna was over here, so it was fun.
Yeah.
I have a feeling we'll be doing more stuff with them in the future.
I hope so. I really do. They're a good group.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we kind of hijacked their show. Actually, Ash, we brought it to new levels of perviness.
Yeah.
Actually, you.
Well, I've been having a bit of a week, so I kind of used their show as like a release for my week. I was like, I'm just gonna be a fucking maniac.
And yeah. And I felt like I was on my soapbox quite a lot. So. I was letting it all out.
Hopefully they don't mind. Hopefully they don't. Although I haven't really heard from them since the episodes. They may hate us.
True. Oh,
I don't know, Scott. Scott and I felt like we had a nice. Scott and I felt like we had a nice, relaxed, fun podcast. It was so easygoing, and there was barely any perviness. No one yelling at me. It was great. I had a great time on ours.
Friends sitting around having a good time.
I think we just got fired. Is what I think just happened.
No.
I didn't tell you guys, but I actually own 34% of the company.
34? Wait, I'm pressing the off button.
No.
Wait, we need to pause for a second. I have a really important question.
Okay.
Ash, are you recording?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I have been. 26 minutes.
I'm going to start now just so we have a backup from this point on.
Yay.
Anyways, back to what we were doing. Disaster averted.
Oh, boy.
That's why we both record, because one of us inevitably forgets.
Let's do the rundown.
Awesome. Well, we have some Gears of War news and also some video game music, which ties in nicely to our new theme song. Pretty cool. Some Star Wars news, and there's a couple points about zombie-related cool things. And
I don't know if it's cool. I don't think it's cool at all.
I think my zombie story is actually quite good, so okay. I'm gonna stick with that. Yeah. There's also some rumors about Microsoft and some Marvel news, so and some E3 announcements. So pretty good stuff. We have a lot on the docket today, so let's get rolling, I guess.
Yeah. We do have some reviews, too. We're going to be talking about the new Mass Effect Multiplayer Rebellion Pack, which all of us have had the opportunity to play. I've been playing a lot of Dragon's Dogma, which I talked about a little bit on Press to Reset, but I've put a couple more hours in, so I'll talk about that.
I'm going to continue the Summer Game Pile series with Rayman Origins. Hillary's going to talk about Kingdoms of Amalur, the Rekakening.
And... hey, now.
And Matt's going to talk about Max Payne 3 multiplayer. And then our open thread question this week is sort of in honor of our new theme song. What song or artist would you like to have for your own personal theme song? Why? It's a great question.
It is.
Thanks.
I actually have an answer this week. I'm excited.
Yeah, I do too.
I do too.
You guys failed so miserably at the time travel one last week. I actually have one this week.
See, I really liked the time travel question, and I answered it with all of my heart, and you guys told me. I was like, I love this question. I'm going to really answer it for once. I'm going to be serious. And you're like, Ash, you pretentious dick.
I guess it's hard to tell your tone just from reading what you wrote. It was very well constructed and very intelligently thought out. But at the same time, you know, we just never know.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm a wild card. All right. So let's go ahead and dive right in, huh?
Oh, well, what have you guys been up to?
What we've been doing, huh?
Been 2 weeks we haven't talked to each other, man.
I know. Let's start with you, Matt, because you've had the most dramatic life changes.
What?
Well, I haven't talked to you.
I'm having a baby.
No,
I'm not. That's a joke. I'm totally not having a baby. It's not true.
Oh, geez.
Hillary thought you were serious.
I did.
Sorry.
I'm like, the wife just moved back in with you. Not that you guys were apart for some bad reason. I mean, not, I don't know. I'll stop.
Oh, this is going the wrong way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your wife has returned.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I guess we haven't talked.
No.
We had a podcast since then. We haven't?
No.
Not with me.
No.
Oh. The lady's back.
Yay.
She lives in New York now. We've been hanging out for a couple of weeks. We actually saw a Sevilla restaurant, Ash. I don't know if you saw that picture last night.
I did. It might be a relative.
It may. You never know.
There's a lot of us up there.
But yeah, hanging out. I read the first Hunger Games book, and I started the second one. I really liked the first one. I thought it was a really fun, like, kind of action-y read. The second one, I won't lie, starts off. It scared me at first, but I think it's starting to get better again. Because it starts off in a really kind of like, you know, this is going to sound bad. I don't mean it to sound bad. It starts off in like a girly, like, love triangle thing. Mm. And I just was kind of like, I don't want to read about this for the next 200 pages. And then
I love that stuff.
I know. Well, yes, you should. There's no problem with you loving that stuff. But, it wasn't what I got used to with that character in the first book. Cause she is such like a, it is about like, it's like, she's basically Bruce Willis, you know, in the first book, like running through killing people and going nuts. And then it starts off in a really soft tone and there's nothing wrong with it. It just caught me off guard. And I thought it was going to be the whole book. And then it moves really quickly and I'm enjoying it. So I am actually really liking the series. And then,
I will be very interested to hear your thoughts on the end of the third book.
The third book? How many are there? Is it just a trilogy, or are there
four?
Yeah, yeah. I think the last one's Mockingjay. Yeah, I think you should definitely be unadulterated in your feedback on the third book.
Okay.
Because there's been some controversy.
They're really fast reads, so I don't mind reading them. You know, like I finished the first one in like 8 days, I think, and the second one, and I'm like halfway through already. So it's good. Why are we all looking weird at each other?
Oh, I was just watching Ash's camera zoom in dramatically.
Yeah, me too. It was like,
I don't know why he's doing that. I just was like pulling up something that I have to talk about that I don't know much about. Anyway.
But well, yeah, so what have you guys been up to?
Well, I finished up work, my day job. I have a little bit of time off now, which is nice. I celebrated last night by staying up late.
Sweet.
I stayed up till like 2 a.m. It was awesome. First time nice. In a really long time I've been able to do that, so that was cool. And other than that, I've just been, you know, plowing away at work, getting ready for the summer, playing some games, still playing Mass Effect, playing Dragon's Dogma, which I'll talk about in a little bit. But everything's been going pretty well. You know, it's been a good end to the work year, so I'm pretty excited to be done for now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, I finished 2 games in a 24-hour period, and I'm kind of proud of both.
Let's all be shocked.
Actually, I finished The Witcher, like the first one on the PC, which I stopped and started at least 3 different times, like over the span of a year.
Yeah, you started that a while ago, didn't you?
Yeah, but I finally, you know, figured out how to play the game and finished it, and it was actually really good, and I would recommend it to people that are into like kind of like straight up RPG action,
and boobs.
And boobs, yeah, and collecting girls that you sleep with. And Dance Central 2. Like, ever since we had that party, like I said on an earlier podcast, like, I don't know, I got into it.
Nice, man.
It's pretty cool. I beat the dance challenges, so I guess I'm...
I was gonna say, how do you beat Dance Central 2?
Well, there's like a crew challenge mode, and you just have to, like, go through all the songs and beat these, like, dance crews and stuff like that, and... I don't know what happened because I can't really dance, but I can play this game, so you know, whatever. Sweet. I'm into it.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I could never do that. I don't have enough discipline to beat Dance Central, but
well, you know, I mean, part of it is exercise too. Like I'm like bored with the gym right now, so I was looking for something else to do. So this is it.
Cool. How many calories do you think you burned?
Well, I turned on the workout mode. And the workout mode says that I've burned like 2,500 calories since I started like using that mode. So I don't know how true that is, but like I find myself wanting to play that game for longer periods of time than I actually want to stay at the gym. So
I mean, figure if you're dancing for like 30 to 45 minutes straight,
yeah,
that should be like 250 calories probably, or 150, somewhere in between there.
Yeah. That's what it works out to be, I think, with because it tracks and tells you how long you've been playing and how many calories you burn while you're playing it. So
that's awesome.
Wow, my estimations are higher. I usually say 10 calories a minute, so I'm wrong. I burned 1,000 calories, a third of a pound almost.
Just trying to drop some lbs, you guys. Just
The Your Shape game LBs. Tracks your calories pretty well. The Your Shape Fitness Evolved. That has a pretty good calorie tracker, but it's always so depressing. Like, you'll work out for like an hour with that thing and be like, you burned 37 calories. Yeah. You're like, what?
You never actually burn as many as you think you are when you're doing stuff. You're like, I just walked for an hour, and it's like 80 calories. And you're like, oh, god damn. Yeah.
37 calories is like a sip of Coke. You're like, oh, fuck.
That's the game I came from, too. I used to do Your Shape, and like, it's so frustrating. And I got kind of bored with the repetitiveness of some of the workouts, so that's why I kind of transitioned over to Dance Central, because it's more fun.
It is.
Hillary, what have you been doing?
Let's see. I've been working a lot, my day job. Mm-hmm. There's some Crabcat stuff that I've been working on that I can't talk about yet, but should be pretty cool news. I know, I'm always saying that. But that's about it. I've been playing The Reckoning, not The Recockening.
That's what they say on Press to Reset, is The Recockoning.
Oh my god.
Yep.
No, yeah, I've been playing that, and I actually, I'll talk about it later, but yeah, I've been playing that and then some ME3 multiplayer, and yeah, pretty much same old, same old.
Did you save the studio with your $40, or was it not enough?
It wasn't enough.
Does that just go
I'm so
to
sad.
Does that just go straight to the state of Rhode Island now? Is that what's going on with me?
I don't know. Thinking that it goes to EA.
Yeah,
probably. I mean, should we just buy used copies of this game, like, in spite of what happened? Like, so, I don't understand.
You know. So I still don't understand this. I always thought that the publisher took the risk on of most of the money. I don't understand why they had such a gigantic loan to do this business, but...
Maybe that's how they got EA to be the publisher.
They just kind of said, like, we'll take the risk, and you guys just get the game out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That is sad news.
Such a bummer. Colossal bummer.
Into it.
It is.
I thought we were over this hurdle. I swear, like, you know, Bonnie Burton getting let go from Star Wars, then the 38th Studios stuff, and then the community group out of BioWare Austin gets let go. What's going on? I feel like every time I turn around, somebody's getting laid off.
It's a weird time for the industry. I mean, you know, no one really knows what's going to happen with the new cycle of consoles. No one really. The whole model of MMO is kind of breaking down. Everyone thought that this was going to be like money in the bank. Everyone's going to make the next Warcraft with 11 million subscribers. And it's just going to be like endless wealth flowing into your pockets. And no one wants to play that shit anymore.
Well, but I mean, I think everybody kind of wistfully forgets about the amount of MMOs that have horribly failed over the past 10 years. There's a lot. For every World of Warcraft, you know, there's 7 or 8 games that didn't even, you know, pull in. Their servers went dead like within a few months or a year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Part of me feels like we just saw a really big boom in the gaming industry over the past 6 years, 7 years, and that we're going to start seeing some shedding over the next 3 or 4, probably, unless the new consoles roll in and really hit another boom again. But it's hard to say. I don't know.
Remember when we were talking about the subscription service for Xbox, and we were talking about them trying to break into a younger market? Mm-hmm. Do you kind of feel like maybe this is changing the guard for a younger, with the onset of next gen consoles? I wonder if it's just kind of like, we need something new. I mean, you're seeing it also in you know, gaming press. So it can't be. I don't think it's isolated to, you know, a studio or a game type. I think it's a lot bigger. Maybe they're just trying to make the industry younger, because, I mean, we're not – all of us are in a demographic that can be kind of considered not an older gamer, but, you know, a more mature gamer.
I mean, we have the money. Yeah,
that's true. We do have the money.
But we also have families now, Scott. Like, I mean, it's like – not that we do. None of us do.
I was like,
But you know what I mean? Like our age group.
My dog.
Our age group of that, you know, like late 20s, mid 30s, has kids usually, and they're not 25 straight out of college with their first job and dropping, you know, $400 on a brand new console and then another $800 on games after that. Like, we may still right now, but our group as a whole is what I'm saying. That's slowing down. And I totally think so. I mean,
I think Microsoft is still just trying to get a PC in every living room to control your home theater like experience.
Oh yeah, 100%.
I think that's the goal.
But I think markets go in generations too, and we are starting to hit the waning side of the generation that we are in.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
that's not depressing.
Sorry.
Well, I started it, right?
Oh,
damn it,
boy.
Now I have to go and have some kids.
It's the only way you can keep it fresh, you know.
I know.
Get to buy the new games for them.
News.
Yeah, so it's bizarre. As you guys were just telling all those terrible tech stories, I was checking the Twitter wall, and I saw a tweet, and actually information from our story just came in. And the information is, there is going to be a brand new Gears of War trilogy, and for fans like myself, that is a huge deal. There is a little bit of a sidebar here, and it's not actually being developed by Epic. It's being developed by People Can Fly, who worked on Bulletstorm. And we have a long history with Bulletstorm on this podcast because we made fun of their marketing campaign quite viciously a long time ago. But we ended up actually liking the game, even though their marketing campaign was absolutely fucking crazy. But in terms of their technical prowess, the game itself was a lot of fun, and the guys at People Can Fly are really good at what they do. And so the new Gears of War trilogy is actually going to be called Gears of War Judgment, and it is going to be takes place about 14 years before the – so it's actually a prequel, 14 years before the original trilogy. So they're doing kind of the Star Wars route, and it's going to be starring Cole and Baird and not Marcus and Dom. And it's about Cole and Baird around the time of E-Day, when the locust first emerged from the holes in the earth and started eating everyone. So should be pretty damn cool. Should be pretty damn cool, because we all like Cole and Baird. So anyway, I'm super excited. As you guys are fully aware, I'm a huge Gears fan, and I was kind of sad when the trilogy was over. my only fear is that it's not going to live up to the pedigree of the original trilogy, because while Epic's probably overseeing it, they're not, you know, they're not sitting there working on it day after day.
Right.
I'd like to think that they're still going to keep the same tone, the same quality. But it, the thing that's interesting is it is for this console generation. So,
that kind of says something in and of itself. That kind of means that maybe we're not going to hear any new console announcements anytime.
Well, I'm hearing definitely not at E3 this year.
Yeah.
Definitely not from any of the – I mean, they're going to have some Wii U stuff there. But other than that, nothing from Microsoft, nothing from Sony. So.
Well, Nintendo has been on like a 1 year earlier cycle than Microsoft and Sony. So it would make sense that next year we might hear something about the next consoles. But I mean, are we really looking forward to like another like new console cycle where all the games kind of blow and we just kind of buy them because there's nothing else to play, you know?
Two disc drives, man. That's all I want.
Two disc drives.
I am with you on that. God, if I have to get up and like change the disc again.
How about just a Blu-ray player?
No, fuck that. Microsoft's not going to get the licensing. There's just two disc drives. Oh, man.
Anyways.
Well, you know what's going to happen if there's a two disc player? Then games will start migrating to three or four.
There's a two disc player. If that actually happens, I'm gonna laugh my ass off endlessly if they show up with two drives.
That would be incredible. That'd be absolutely incredible.
Oh man.
All right, Hillary, so what do you have with this music news?
So we'll just touch on this really quick because I really don't know that much about it. I just thought it was interesting. IGN has a contest. I think I grabbed it from the UK site. So it's basically vote on a video game song or theme song to be played by the London Philharmonic, which is pretty cool. There's a list of games that you can go vote on. I'm not sure if we'll have it in the notes because voting might be closed by the time this podcast comes out. Oops. But pretty much, you know, ME3 is on the list, which I think we're all excited about. And some surprising news is Skyrim only has half the votes that Mass Effect 3 does.
Interesting.
So you would think that a theme from Skyrim would be more aligned with the sound of a orchestra, but Mass Effect 3 is in the lead, and that would be pretty fantastic to hear the theme song. So I'm not sure which song from ME3 it is. I feel like Mass Effect 3 has its own theme song, which is that piano horn. <That one. laughs> But it could be the, you know, regular Mass Effect theme. So it'll be interesting.
I never want to hear the piano song again. Get it away.
We talked about it on the Press Reset. Reset Transmission podcast, and I think all of us felt the same way.
I'm just tired of that because I think it started with Christopher Nolan. I'm just tired of that, like, that big low noise that just happens. And I got so excited because when the Prometheus trailers started coming out, it was that really high-pitched shriek, and I was like, yay, a new sound for something. And then the next trailer that came out right after that had a big, like, inside of it. And I was like, wow, God damn it.
Well, and I hate when you play the game and you're in the space map and, you know, you're scanning and the stupid Reapers are following you. I talked about it on the other podcast, but that noise actually just freaks me out a lot.
Yeah.
It made me almost leave the world, the War of the
Worlds. Did anybody ever get caught by the Reapers?
Yeah, I let it happen just to see what would happen.
What happened?
You reboot back to the when you entered the system, so it's like a 15 seconds of your life penalty. Like, that's it. That's all that happens. So I would
the death music trigger the darn darn darn.
Yes, it does.
I think that song is even more annoying than the piano horn song.
Yeah, yeah.
In my opinion.
Hopefully the Philharmonic plays that just for like 20 minutes straight. The death tone. Dun 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 dun.
Oh God,
Scott! I'm excited. I read a little bit about this morning. Tell me a little bit of what you know of Star Wars 1313.
So I guess next week they're gonna LucasArts is gonna announce a new Star Wars game series called 1313 that focuses on bounty hunters like in the bowels of Coruscant.
Nice.
So what do you think? Probably not gonna be. You know, like there was a Star Wars Bounty Hunter game on PS2 GameCube generation, which was pretty awesome.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're trying to sort of rekindle some of that glory while reining in some new Star Wars fans, I think this is going in the right direction.
That is exactly what I was going to say, is that one of my favorite Star Wars games of all time was that PS2 game, Star Wars Bounty Hunter. Like,
yeah,
it was so much fun to play. It was like exactly what you wanted out of it, which was feeling like Boba Fett, or was it Jango? Who were you in that game?
I think you were Jango.
I think you were Jango. Yeah. You actually felt like him. You had the jetpack, and you were good at shooting, and like everything worked really well. It felt like a solid game. And I mean, the graphics look good from the couple of screenshots I saw on The Verge. So if they can pull that off again, then
I'm all for it. I mean, I don't know if the world of Star Wars really translates that well into gritty, because the world is so sleek, and you have, you know, I mean, I'm sure if you think about like Mos Eisley and stuff, it's kind of gritty, but then you incorporate lasers and stuff, and it's not, and all of a sudden it kind of takes you out of that like grit mentality.
Mm-hmm.
But I do love the Star Wars Bounty Hunters a lot. That's some of my favorite stuff in the Clone Wars, is the whole like seedy underbelly of the Star Wars universe. So if they do a good job, and they don't kind of muddle up the story or muck up the story, so to speak, then it'll be awesome.
You mean they don't throw in a Jar Jar?
Yeah.
I think I read somewhere that this is actually going to be a original trilogy era game as well.
And I'm an idiot. That's not graphics. That's a painting, I think.
Concept art?
Yeah, it's concept
art. But I mean, like, just look at the Star Wars games that didn't focus on, like, Force-using characters like Bounty Hunter and Shadows of the Empire. Like, those were some pretty good games.
Shadows of the Empire was N64, wasn't it?
Indeed, it was.
Wow.
Don't you feel like that's kind of the Superman complex, where once you become a Jedi and you're basically like an all-powerful being, that it kind of becomes less fun unless you're just owning everything around you?
Yeah, and I mean, I think, well, I guess to speak to that a little bit, that's sort of what made like the Jedi Knight like series a pretty good game, because you started out as a normal dude. You started out basically playing Doom, and then you kind of like evolved into a Force-using character, which made the game more interesting. Instead of like starting you out as like, I mean, like, as good as the Force Unleashed games are, like, they become a little over the top.
Yeah.
Like, after, like, a few hours of playing, so.
You're also killing 7,000 of, like, whatever creature you fight. Yeah. Like, Force Unleashed, you must have killed literally thousands of stormtroopers. I mean, it gets kind of asinine. And then the beginning where you're playing as Darth Vader and you're killing, like, endless Wookiees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's an achievement, like, kill 500 Wookiees. You're like, this is terrible.
What was the old game, is an old PC game where you were just like a guy at first who...
That's Jedi Knight.
That's Jedi Knight? Okay, yeah. That was a great game too then. Yeah.
Like it was like Jedi Knight and then Dark Forces or something. Three or four games in that series were really good. So I mean, I think like obviously the narrative is going to be really important, you know, in the gameplay. So I mean, we'll just have to wait and see what they decide to do with those things before we can figure out if it's going to be something worth looking into more.
Awesome.
Cool.
So the zombie apocalypse is upon us.
So this is like not even funny news, and I won't even try and put like a stupid spin on it like I normally do. But in Miami, I'm sure everyone in the entire world knows about this, but there was a homeless man that was savagely attacked by another gentleman who was on a new sort of designer drug called bath salts. And bath salts, I learned the other day, do not involve salt at all, or anything you actually put in the bath. It is just a nickname to the drug.
And I was like, really? I actually thought that it was the bath salts that you put into.
No. So did I. I did too. I'm like, man, like bath salts are just, stay away from those. You don't want to take a bath. Those will fuck you up. Yeah. You don't take a bath with those things, you're going to cannibalize your whole family.
Oh. Didn't they basically say this is like the equivalent of meth, but like 10 times?
Yeah, so. It's like kind of meth with some of the traits of LSD and a lot of the traits of PCP kind of all mixed together. And it says that it heats up your body so much that you pretty much are like boiling from the inside out. So most of the people that take this bath salts, they end up stripping off all their clothes and they enter this sort of like state of dementia where they don't know where they are. They don't know what they're doing, but they're just incredibly, incredibly angry and kind of crazed. And I don't know. So there is Christina and I read this testimony of a guy that took it just to see what would happen. And he took it by himself. And he said he was high for about a week. And for the entire week that he was high, he was, he stayed inside of his house and suffered from like extreme paranoia and extreme anger and aggression, and basically just kind of ran around his whole house, just like punching everything. And then he said he was just terrified, and he would like hide under the covers And pretty much it kind of melts your brain and makes you into a maniac.
And so literally melts your brain, not
it literally does.
Yeah.
So the short version of the story is, and I'm sure many of you guys have seen the absolutely disgusting photographs. If you haven't,
don't look. So they're horrible.
Don't look at it. But I was laying in bed and I got a text message at like 5:30 in the morning, and it's my buddy Mark, and he's like, it just sent me a link, and I'm like, oh, what the fuck is this? So I click the link, and it's the guy's face eaten off from the zombie attack. And obviously I was just like, that's terrible. So then I sent it to like a bunch of my other friends. At 5:30 in the morning, I was like, now try to go back to sleep.
Sure.
But yeah, I know. But so, you know, the circumstances were absolutely ludicrous. I mean, there was a homeless guy sleeping under the overpass. This gentleman who was on the bath salts ran up and just savagely attacked him and bit off like 75% of his face. And he wouldn't back down, and the cops ended up having to shoot him. And the weird part of the story is actually took place – the Miami Herald, who reported on it first, it actually took place right outside of their building. So the guys from the Herald were actually looking outside of the window like as everything was sort of unfolding.
Yeah. Wow.
They were just kind of like peeking out
there's
the
like
window.
An 18-minute video of it too, not of the actual attack. Yeah, the guy would not go down, and it lasted a long friggin' time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I actually slipped in a link into the story. The Huffington Post actually had a story about this, where the CDC is denying the existence of zombies based on this.
I think if there is any bit of humor, it's that the government had to actually state, no, zombies do not exist.
Yeah.
This is a man on drugs that freaked out.
I read that on the CDC's website, they kind of came up with the idea of using like preparedness for the zombie apocalypse as a way to get people educated about dealing with real like disaster incidents, because they say that like if you prepare for the zombie apocalypse, you'll know how to do things like find food and water and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's like an actual disaster. So it was more of like a sort of like a promotional kind of thing.
Well, I think
putting that on their website.
It was bad timing, I think, is what really happened. And then they finally said, like, whoa, hold on, everybody calm down. This is just a guy on drugs.
I don't know. All this talk makes me realize how prepared I am not.
Yeah, absolutely.
I asked Melissa,
that I'd be the first one to die.
I asked Melissa last night, I was like, would you rather be in Florida or in New York? And she's like, well, for New York, there's a lot more people that could be zombies. And I was like, I never thought about that. It's like, I don't know where, because in New York you could get to just like a tall ass building and just sit at the top of it and like hole up for as long as you can survive.
But where do you get the water?
I don't know, man. I haven't figured that out yet. And then they were saying there's a rash in southern Florida. There's some rash that the CDC or whoever it is couldn't identify. And they don't know what it is, but some kind of flesh eating rash that is showing up in Florida.
Like MRSA or something?
They came out and said like, yeah, it's here. We don't know what it is. We haven't been able to classify it as anything yet. So
wonderful.
There you
good
go.
Times.
So uplifting.
Yeah.
Super. On to E3 news. So speaking of flesh eating bacteria, E3 starts this week.
It's true. So I only heard a couple things about EA announcements, but some things that I kind of got excited about. Dead Space 3, we already know about. There was a screenshot released, and they basically said that there will be news on June 4th about Dead Space 3. So I'm a big fan of that series. So it's going to be good times. And then Need for Speed Most Wanted, a new game was announced. So that should be pretty cool. And I love Need for Speed just because it was the first game that I played on Xbox 360 because it came with it. And awesome. I'm not a big racing car game fan, whatever. But it's a good series. But yeah.
We are all big Dead Space fans here. So
Will that game be – will it lose something by being co-op? Like it won't be spooky anymore, right?
You definitely won't get that sense of, you know, solidarity where you're creeping through those dark halls alone with crap jumping out at you if you have somebody watching your back. So that's going to change it up a little bit.
Do you think they're trying to, like, actionize this game as a response to the second game?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. EA is going to throw co-op in everything because it seems to sell copies. I mean, that's just kind of the way it's going to go.
Yeah, I mean, the money coming in off of multiplayer is pretty fantastic, actually.
Specifically, Mass Effect multiplayer, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, this is going to have a co-op campaign. You know what I mean? And like, Dead Space is traditionally like a survival horror game where it's supposed to be scary and like you listen to this environmental noise like while you're playing the game and you play with the lights off, and I feel like a lot of that's going to be lost. It's going to, like, I feel like they're kind of changing the tone of the franchise a little bit by doing this.
I don't know, to be fair. I mean, my husband and I actually will play Dead Space together because it's a fun, we'll trade off and, you know, the lights are out and we're getting freaked out and it's spooky. I'm just as scared playing, you know, trading off with him, and, you know, I'll scream and the whole, you know, the whole scary bit. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's fun to play live with someone. I can't imagine it not being fun when you're on your headset playing, you know what I mean? Because you're still creeping through the scary whatever together.
Yeah, that's true.
And if something jumps out, both of you are going to be afraid. So
true
that.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, I'm excited for Dead Space 3 and to see what's going on and see if Isaac Clarke's adventures continue, and maybe to see who the co-op character is. Didn't they introduce a new female protagonist in the second game? I remember really liking that character. I don't remember her name at this point, unfortunately, because I haven't played it in so long, but she was a pretty cool character.
Yeah, I remember her, but I don't remember her name.
Yeah. She lost her eye. Remember? She like got her eye gouged out very painfully. Yeah. So good stuff. We will see. We're going to have so much news next week that our heads are going to explode because of E3. So
yeah,
a little bit too much news. Yep. So, Matthias.
So, you know, Marvel stuff. The Avengers was awesome. And they just announced a massive 10-disc Blu-ray edition that they're going to release for The Avengers, which will include The Avengers, Captain America, Thor, Iron Man, Iron Man 2, The Incredible Hulk, a bonus disc called the Phase 1 Archives, and then which I think is going to be probably all the shorts like attached together, and then a bunch of extras about the forming of the Avengers, I would assume, maybe even some Nick Fury background. And then they're doing some kind of collectible exclusive memorabilia with the big release. I just thought it was a pretty cool thing to see. You know, it was the same feeling, I think, when Harry Potter put like their full 8-disc Blu-ray edition out, when Star Wars puts its full universe thing out. Like, I just think it's cool stuff. So
it's cool.
I actually have already pre-ordered it. And I'm going to be getting it, but I don't know about you guys.
Unfortunately, I just got all the Blu-rays for my birthday. So
did you really?
I just got all of them. And I watched them all again, and they were all still pretty damn good. Also on some Avenger news, I've been hearing through the grapevine, I don't know how legitimate this is, this may just be total bullshit, but I heard that Jake Gyllenhaal is in talks right now for Ant-Man. So
Gyllenhaal? That'd be good.
Chesty Jake.
Yeah.
Chesty Jake is going to be the Ant-Man.
Chesty Jake?
Yeah, that's what we call him here on the podcast. We call him Chesty Jake.
Yeah, that's what we call him.
Yes.
Wait, is it because of Prince of Persia?
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. And he's chesty.
Oh, boy.
Because of that chest. So, yeah, so I'm excited. I mean, I'm, you know, we talked about Avengers a lot, but I'm super, I'm just in a happy place that it all worked out.
Yeah.
You know, it shouldn't have, but it did. So, yes.
Awesome.
Yes. So you guys were on Press to Reset last week, and I think the question came up about, like, what are you excited for E3? And I think the thing that I'm excited about is Microsoft or Xbox in general, just to see what they do, because the consoles become such a central part, you know, of our home existence right now, that anything that's coming out, I think, is worth taking a look at. So there have been some leaks about what might be talked about at E3 next week, and that's the first one's called Smart Glass, which is basically like an AirPlay feature and a feature that would allow you to control your Xbox from something other than your Windows phone, so like Android and iOS. So I think that's kind of a cool thing.
Okay. So it is going to include Android and iOS.
Yeah, that's cool. This is all rumor at this point.
Yeah.
But it basically emulates some of the features of like Apple's AirPlay, where it's like you can stream things from your tablet to your TV, like TV to desktop and all that other stuff. And then sort of coinciding with this is that earlier this week, Microsoft released Windows 8 Release Preview, which is the next version from the Consumer Preview, which came out a few months ago. So it's got some bug fixes and like different UI and a more like a stronger focus on the app interface and sort of this Metro style thing that they're going to with Windows 8. And I downloaded that and installed it, and it's pretty cool. That also has an app built in right now called Xbox Companion that allows you to do the same stuff that like Smart Glass sounds like it would do. So if you have a Windows 8 machine that's on the same network as your Xbox, you can control the Xbox, browse the content, make purchases, and do all that stuff. So it's sort of like a tightly integrated Xbox.com, but in an app form on your computer. And then the last bit of Microsoft news is, for a long time, there's been a rumor about a new sort of replacement service for the Zune, which is the codename for it is called Woodstock, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be sort of like a Spotify or kind of like what iTunes Match is right now, where you can, it will scan your existing library and it should give you access to it streaming when you're away from your music library, if I'm not mistaken. So that's kind of exciting. And the reason why it's exciting is because that means that Microsoft would have a solution for streaming music on something other than Windows Phone. So you can get it on iOS and Android. So if you're like a Zune subscriber, like I am, because I like listening to that music on my Xbox, like this is kind of exciting news. So hopefully they'll talk about that this week as well.
Yeah.
Cool. Very cool.
And part of to kind of, we talked about it on Twitter. What am I? I've got like speaking problems. We talked about it on Twitter. It's going along with that. But Amazon released an app for the Xbox. You can now watch Amazon video.
Oh, thank
Xbox.
God.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Best news ever.
Which is kind of shocking. I'm a little blown away, but I think it's awesome. I'm super into it because I buy most of my video through Amazon, and I've got Amazon Prime too. So
yeah,
it is good times.
I think the more agnostic Amazon can be, the better it will be for them.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, yeah. Amazon just wants to get their shit on as many devices as possible. I'm totally. More shocked that Microsoft allowed it with Zune and all the other products that they offer. But, you know.
I mean, but they've got Best Buy's movie service and Walmart's movie service. Yeah. So, like, I mean, it was kind of like, what's the deal? You know, it was already on PS3 for a while.
I'm sure they're getting some cut of those purchases every time somebody rents or buys a video on Amazon. I'm sure there's some fee that gets paid to Microsoft, so.
Yeah, well, just give me NFL Sunday ticket now. And I'm
oh, Jesus, please.
Yeah.
What do you think the life of the Roku will? I mean, the more kind of things that you can stream movies from consoles, I mean, it's kind of killing the Roku.
I don't know, because we have a Roku. It's in our bedroom. You know, like, I don't have an Xbox in every room, and a Roku is such a cheap little device that I can throw anywhere that I think it kind of sits in a different sector. You know, I think for $60-$70, I can put a box that streams everything that I stream on my Xbox in a different room.
You can buy a Roku for $50 now.
Yeah, whatever. It's kind of like, to me, it's just an extender of my media. It's not necessarily a full-on, like, media platform like the Xbox. So I don't know. I mean, I could see it getting hurt a little because people obviously wouldn't buy, like before someone would buy it and have it sitting next to their Xbox. But now, you know, it definitely doesn't compete in that kind of realm to me, though. Who knows?
I think it's a good like bedroom device or something you can travel with. And like with that news that, you know, we talked about how Roku might be on like a USB stick for a new.
Hold on. Did Hillary just laugh at bedroom device?
What?
Oh, boy.
Yikes. Bedroom device.
I did snicker.
So anyways.
So, Matt, you have some late breaking news.
It's not really like breaking. I just forgot to add it. In the usual fashion, you know, DC announces something and then Marvel announces something really similar. And I actually don't know which one came first, but Marvel announced that there was going to be a gay marriage in one of their comics. And it was the character. Oh, shit. I didn't write
it
down.
It's North Star, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. I think it's North Star. Got married, who's been long time like out gay in the comics, so he's just marrying like his longtime boyfriend, which was a cool thing. And then DC announced that they were going to reveal a major character that was going to be gay. Everybody started making the Aquaman jokes immediately, and then it came out that it's actually the original Green Lantern, Alan Scott, who's going to be outed as gay in the new issue of, I think it's called Earth 2, which is one of their like. Their alternate universe stuff confuses me, but it's one of their alternate timelines that runs alongside of the main timeline or something. I don't really know.
Yeah.
But
beyond my comprehension.
I guess he had a son that was gay that now they're rebooting this Alan Scott's character, and he's going to be younger again, so he doesn't have a son. And the writer was like, well, I kind of wanted to keep that kind of theme going, so he made Alan Scott is going to be out as gay. So kind of interesting. I think comics are able to push some barriers that maybe, you know, I don't know. I guess TV's had gay characters for a long time. Yeah. But
as long as it's tastefully done and it actually promotes equality in any way, then I'm all for it. But if it's any sort of, if it's done in a way that's sort of like a money grab or just to generate press or controversy, then I think that's a poor choice.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see how it's actually executed, you know?
Yeah. It's hard to know with this one because it's not out yet. So we don't know what it reads like, but the North Star one, I can tell you, was actually really good. And the proposal and the actual marriage scene was done really well and really, really tastefully. And it was a really kind of like emotional, good scene.
Kudos to them for being brave.
So a former creative strategist who worked on the Call of Duty games, Robert Bowling, just announced a game called Human Element to be released on next-gen consoles and then also PC and Mac in 2015. So there's a couple links that I've looked at that have kind of their poster art. It looks fantastic, and it's about zombies. So back to the zombie apocalypse.
Oh, jeez.
Oh,
so
man.
I cannot wait for that. Super excited.
Excellent.
Now you can go potty.
Okay. So splice in my we'll be right back, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Thanks, Scott. Love you.
Uh-huh.
Can we have a laugh track now?
Yes. That was the best laugh track ever.
Mass Effect Multiplayer, Dragon's Dogma, Rayman Origins, The Rekakening, and Max Payne 3.
It's not Rekakening.
Oh, boy.
So all
just
of us...
kick them when they're down, man. 38 studios. Poor guy.
Yeah.
Maybe if they called it The Rekakening.
Whoa. That's a totally different game.
Yeah, it is. That's more in line with The Witcher.
Oh. Indeed. That's the subtitle of The Witcher 3, actually.
Witcher 3, The Rekakening?
Indeed.
Oh, I can't wait to play Witcher 2. Anyway, so we have all played Mass Effect 3 Multiplayer Rebellion, and I just kind of wanted to get a little bit of feedback on what you guys think of the new maps and the new guns and some of the characters you guys have unlocked and all that stuff, because we love Mass Effect Multiplayer, and I'm at the place where I don't want to get sick of it, so I'm glad they keep adding stuff. And it seems like, and to use a horrible World of Warcraft term, the drop rate for this new content is very, very low. I played a lot, like probably like 6 hours, and I think I got like one of the new characters. So,
yeah.
Which one did you get? You got the male, right?
I got the male Quarian Engineer.
I got him.
You got him?
And the Vorcha.
You got the Vorcha. You and Scott both got the Vorcha. So let me ask you guys this. What did you feel about? How do you feel about the Vorcha?
I didn't really understand the powers, really. The flamethrower was hit or miss, and I think it's a Sentinel. And the Bloodlust, I'm not sure about that one either. The cluster grenades is pretty standard. But I wasn't sure what the bonus was on Bloodlust.
Yeah. Does it work like the Krogan Bloodlust, where you have to get kills with melee? Or?
I guess.
It sounds like, Hillary, did you get the Vorcha Sentinel or the Soldier?
Yeah, the Sentinel.
I got the Soldier. I think the only difference is that the Vorcha Soldier, instead of the grenades, has Carnage. But okay. the Vorcha's Carnage appears to be a little slower, and it seems to be on fire, too. Like, it almost looks like a flaming bullet or something when it fires out of the gun.
Incendiary Carnage or something?
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the Vorcha's a really bizarre class, because you have Bloodlust, it's something that needs to be either turned on or off. And then when you have it on, your powers don't recharge as quickly, but it's similar to the Krogan, where you have to get kills, but the kills don't have to be melee for the Vorcha.
Right.
So if
if you turn the Bloodlust on, and you don't have to kill three, it's like more of like a stacking thing. So you kill one guy, and the Bloodlust starts. And I think if you kill three within a certain like time frame, he goes into like the full rage or whatever.
Yeah, and then the screen gets all weird.
Yeah, the screen gets like blood red. I think the major benefits are health regeneration and increased melee damage and increased speed if you spec it for speed.
Well, I think that what's funny, too, is that I was asking people I was playing with, I kept asking, am I red to you? Like, do I look red? And they said, yes. So I'm not 100% sure because I haven't seen anybody else play Vorcha. But if I'm red running around and then someone else is using hunter mode with their Geth, are they not going to think that I'm an enemy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well,
let me tell you, I didn't like the Vorcha at first until I played a game with two other Vorcha. And then I understood what was going on because the Vorcha's like playstyle is totally like it's like frantic. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like you can, you know, just like any other character, you can very easily sit back and like just fire, like bunker down like everyone else does. But the Vorcha's like allure is really just to get out there and brawl. Like he's really a brawler. Like his melee attacks are fast. The character is fast. He's got like a super fast dodge.
He doesn't have very many hit points, though, so it's not like playing a Krogan where you're like a tank. It's more of like you're a scrapper and you have to go up and just hack the shit out of stuff, right? Yeah,
but the thing is that like he's like the opposite of the Geth, so he's got like really low shields and really like kind of like above average health, right?
Yeah.
But if you get the Bloodlust turned on, you get regenerating health. So you're basically playing the whole round without shields. I mean, one shot will take your shields off, no problem.
So to kind of D&D, he's like a monk, kind of, essentially.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think so, because I spent a lot of time going into Bloodlust and then just, like, charging people, because his melee attacks become so strong at that point that, like, you could even charge, like, a pyro and still, like, come out okay, because your health is regenerating at the same time. So it's like a mess, but when I played that game with the other two Vorcha, we all had the flamethrowers, so, like, a Ravager would come into our base, and all three flamethrowers would turn on, and we would just, like, the Ravager didn't even fire back. You know, it's like a really bizarre thing.
Huh.
Yeah. Cool. Well, one really cool thing about the Rebellion pack is the Harrier. Oh, man. I mean,
I have not gotten the Harrier yet.
That is such a cool gun.
Was that the gun you were running around going like, oh, my God, this gun is cool. Oh, my God, this gun is cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that the arc projector one or the...
No, it's just an assault rifle, but I don't know, because it feels... Maybe it's the sound or something, but it in the stability of it, I don't know. It felt like I was playing a real like present day like assault, like I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
it's the Madoc with
automatic
full auto. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. See, I unlocked the Rieger carbine, the new shotgun that is basically a big Tesla gun.
Did you figure out how to use that? I was terrible.
Yeah,
with it.
I figured out you have to get the extended clip on it, and then you just got to get really close. So you got to get a class that's, you know, you can either do it from stealth, like with an infiltrator and pop out of stealth and just zap something, or you can do it with a big tanking class and just spray enemies with it. But it is incredibly powerful, a lot of fun, very different. It's kind of like, you know, kind of like having a Ghostbuster gun.
Yeah.
And, I also unlocked the Quarian Male Engineer.
How awesome is that?
Which is pretty cool. He has a target designation, so basically you can tag a target, and if you spec it the correct way, it'll light up all the enemies, even through walls, and you can kind of get a layout of the enemy attack pattern. So it's more of like a leader class. Like I was playing last night with Abby Heppy and her group of people, and it got really super tactical, which was really neat to see, like, you know, actually trying to plan out attacks and things like that using that ability. So it for gold matches and things like that, I can see one person using the Quarian Male Engineer and kind of like calling out the shots of like, you know, what target we focus on, where to move, what to do. So it
you
is
a damage bonus on that too, right?
Yeah, damage bonus, headshot bonus, and you know, the enemy becomes basically just, you know, prime target, which was cool.
You become the ultimate support class. I think it's like an awesome character to play.
Yeah, because the Male Engineer doesn't do much damage. Like he has that and I think Incinerate, and I've never been a huge fan of Incinerate, so I kind of specced into everything else. And he also gets these new, what were they called? Tesla grenades or something to that effect, or Emp grenades. which kind of lay out this big field of electricity that does a damage over time. So fun. The new maps are great. What did you guys think? Did you get a chance to play them both?
They definitely
force you. I've only been on Goddess. I haven't seen the other one.
Oh, jeez. They definitely force you to move. Like, you can't, there's no more, like, four kick-ass in these maps.
Yeah, yeah, I like that.
I don't. I want to develop another Fort Kickass.
It's hard.
Easy money.
Yeah.
I've only played a couple of times, and I kind of had the same experience as you, Ash, except I didn't get any characters. I bought two things, and all I got was guns, and I don't even think I got any of the new guns. I think they were all upgrades to my old existing guns. So I haven't really felt it too much, but I haven't honestly played it a lot either, so I need to... to get back.
Well,
in
the new mode too, the new objective, I actually really like.
Oh,
pick up two packages and deliver them to an extraction point. And typically, what happens is the extraction point or the carrier gets attacked. Like, they increase the spawn rate while this objective is happening, and so you have to escort the package to the extraction point.
Yeah,
I liked it, but the only problem is they keep spawning the package very close to the extraction point, so it's very easy.
Yeah,
I'd imagine on gold it's really challenging, but on silver it was pretty easy. So
I think anything though that makes you get up, I like it because it's a little less sit in one place and get attacked, and it's not go kill something. It adds a little bit of team movement without the objective being so repetitive, I guess.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Definitely outside of like our own friends, like people that we know that we play with, there's like the community really has a problem with teamwork. You know what I mean? Like, as far as like even like on, because silver almost becomes like free for all now, where everybody just kind of disperses and does their own thing. So it's nice that there are reasons now to get even like strangers to work together in the middle of these matches. So that I think that's a good thing for the game.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Awesome.
Agreed.
So, thumbs up all around. Good job with the Rebellion pack. We like it. Can't wait to see what's next.
Get your package to the extraction on time.
Whoa, hey-o.
Hey-o.
So, Ash, I did not even know this game was out, let alone that you were playing it. So.
Yeah. So, first of all, I'm happy to say that this game is number one in Japan right now. Sold over 300,000 copies in its first weekend in Japan, and is actually in the top five here in the U.S. as well. So it's doing very well. So I'm happy for Capcom that this game's doing well. And of course, we're talking about Dragon's Dogma, which is the new open world RPG from Capcom. I talked about it for a little bit on Press to Reset when I was over there. But I guess the easiest way to describe it is you take the same sort of world of exploration that would exist in a game like Skyrim. You move it to a third person action setting, if that makes any sense. So the controls are similar to that of like a Devil May Cry or a Bayonetta. Does that make sense? Maybe a little less flashy than Bayonetta, because Bayonetta is ridiculous. But that that level of really well-polished Twitch gaming placed into a hardcore RPG, and that's what Dragon's Dogma is, and that's why it works. So you can play one of nine different classes, all of which are unlocked very early, and you can switch in between those classes pretty much at will. All you have to do is go to town, you pay like a little bit of like basically like credits, and then you can switch from, let's say, a sorcerer to a warrior. No big deal. The only problem is there's very little loot in this game. I think for the first 10 hours, I was telling Derek about this yesterday, but the first 10 hours of gameplay, I think I didn't have a single magic item. So it is pretty much the antithesis of Diablo, where you're just like showered with crap. Like literally the first like 5 hours of the game, I was running through the forest in like a leather tunic and like a rusty sword and just exploring. So it's a game of exploration, about seeing what's beyond that next hill. And slowly and methodically gearing yourself up. So it's very different.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I'm gonna have a question after Hillary talks about The Reckoning about these games.
Yes. The only other thing I have to touch on really quick before we move on away from Dragon's Dogma and the fact that it's good is they did create a new system called the Pawn System. And it's really bizarre, but as you create your main avatar with a pretty you know, hardcore, robust character creation system, where even like the musculature of your character determines how much weight you can carry and how fast you move. Hmm. So if you build like a really frail, skinny character, you'll be really fast, but you won't be able to carry as much weight. But if you
oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, if you build this really hulking, strong guy, you'll be a little bit slower, but you can carry more weight and things like that. So that is really, really unique.
Usually character design has no impact on the game whatsoever. So
yeah,
that's
and this,
cool.
this time it does, so it's cool. And you can actually tweak, you know, everything. So it's about as in-depth, if actually even more so than, you know, than the BioWare stuff, because you can build someone who's actually child size and play as a child-sized avatar in this game, which is kind of weird.
Wow.
You also get to create, so you create your main character, you play for about 10 minutes, then you create something called your pawn, and your pawn is like your Robin, it's your sidekick throughout the entire game. You'll always have your pawn with you, and your pawn can be any class. You can pick it, you know, both genders, and you create them with the same system. And then every time you log out, or even as you're playing, your pawn is constantly being pinged to a server, and other players throughout the world can recruit your pawn into their parties. So as you're traveling, you always have a team of four. It'll be your pawn and then two other pawns that have been created by the community. And you can bring other pawns in from your friends list very easily. You just click invite friend pawns, and then your friend pawns will appear, and you can choose who you drag into your party. And so you constantly have this pretty cool system, and you can send let's say I use Matt has a pawn. I'll use Matt's pawn for a couple hours. Whatever adventure she goes on, she'll learn. And when she goes back to Matt's game, she'll be like, oh, I think there's a chest over this hill.
What?
She's experienced it in my game. And I can
cool.
It is cool. And you can, you know, if she does like a quest that I haven't done, she'll be like, oh, this guy's no good. Don't trust him, because she's actually experienced it in another world. So it's really that, I mean, that's super innovative. And you actually, you know, run around with your friends' characters, which is neat. It gives you like the opportunity to be creative, and because other people actually get to see your creation in their game. So really, really neat.
Awesome.
If you're into action RPGs at all, pick up Dragon's Dogma. A little bit light on story, but everything else is really highly recommended.
Hillary, why don't you talk about Kingdoms a little bit?
Yeah, as you're describing Dragon's Dogma, all the things that you like about it, sans pawns, it sounds a whole lot like Reckoning, and I'm actually kind of surprised that you have not been a tried and true fan of the Amalur game, because a lot of the stuff is there, so it's beautiful, it's gorgeous. Actually, I think it's some of the best like game art that I've seen, with interactive things like plants coming to life because you're magical or whatever. And your ability to change your destiny. Of course, your race bonus has something to do with it. Like, I picked Valani, I think it's called, because I like to play rogue. So I'm spec'd to be rogue/sorcery, which is kind of cool that you can do kind of combinations of abilities. But yeah, I mean, and things like dispelling and crafting. And I've never really been one to like blacksmithing, but in this game, I think it's amazing. And sage crafting, where you're putting crystals together. I don't know. It's really, I don't know. Maybe I'm just in the mood for this kind of open world, maybe light on story, but a ton of side quests.
Yeah.
And I think I've been playing probably 11, 12 hours, and I have not come. I mean, I've done all side quests, like factions and side quests and tasks and things like that. But it's a gorgeous game. And I don't know. I kind of love it a lot.
No.
Kingdoms is supposed to be like a 100-hour game, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's huge.
It's huge.
The map is ginormous. I mean, I've experienced so much in this one tiny section of the map, and it's like this huge map. So I can only imagine that I'm going to be spending more and more time. And it's on one disc, which is surprising too.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot of content. But yeah, I mean, I really, really like it. I don't know. I'm surprised that you didn't like it, Ash, if you're liking Dragon's Dogma.
Yeah, I think the thing about Kingdoms, and just to clarify, it's not that I didn't like the game, I just wasn't really in the place where I felt like playing it. Like, I still own it, I still plan on eventually beating it, but at the time, I was like, oh man, here's another fetch quest. I have to go out in the woods, and I have to collect 10 bear pelts, and then I have to bring them back to this guy, or I have to give this woman this potion. And I understand that's sort of the bread and butter of all RPGs. But at the time, the last thing I really wanted to do after finishing Skyrim was run across a map and deliver something to someone. So I was like, it was just, I think, a more poor timing. which also may have been something that really hurt 38 Studios. It was a time where, you know, there were a lot of big RPGs kind of floating around at the time that Kingdoms of Amalur came out. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, from a marketing perspective, maybe you would understand it better than I did, but I think it could have just been a question of poor timing. I agree that the game did look beautiful. It played very well. I played it as a rogue as well, and I loved the backstab mechanic. I thought that was awesome. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the story wasn't pulling me in. I just felt like they were throwing so much lore at me at once. And all these new names, all this new crap. I didn't know who anyone was. There's like, oh, here comes Sally Jasmine. And I'm like, I don't know who the fuck that is. So.
No, I mean, I agree. I mean, the lore, I felt, I mean, some of the names I just kind of rolled my eyes at. And you kind of expect that from a new RPG, though. I mean, you expect to have this story that, and I'm not really invested a lot in that kind of stuff. I mean, I think that's probably where the BioWare games kind of exceed expectations, because it's so emotionally engaging. There's that buzzword again, that you kind of know the lore because it has to do with some kind of story that you're emotionally connected to, versus here's this big open world with lots of funny, cool new names, and there's Fae, and there's all these magical things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you're not as emotional. It's like, I mean, Skyrim is different because I've been invested in that franchise for so long that I'm expecting that level of depth. I mean, I'm not a codex reader. You know, if I get a book, if I know if it's a skill book, I'll read it. But if I get something that says like on alchemy, I'm not really going to read it. I'll probably pick it up to sell it. So yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, for some people who want to get really emotionally invested into Kingdoms, well, that sucks because there isn't going to be another game. But I would have absolutely pre-ordered Reckoning 2 or KOA 2 if that was going to happen. I wouldn't have participated in the MMO, but I mean, it's already hooked me in so much that I would love to see a future for this franchise. Wow. But it's not going to happen. So
yeah.
Why is it that in role-playing games, the only role I can play is dude in a fantasy world? Like, why can't I be a ninja doing combat moves, or why can't I be a guy in modern times having magic? Like,
yeah, that's true.
Why are there no other roles to play in these games?
That's true.
You mean like urban fantasy instead? Like, well, I mean, you know,
what about
anything at all that's not medieval?
What about Fallout or Mass Effect?
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. There's not enough of that other stuff. I feel like it's like, how do I pick between? I go to the store and I see Skyrim, Kingdoms, Dragon's Dogma, and Witcher 2. How do I pick one of those games?
You know what
I
mean? Fantasy is a popular genre, and it's very, very competitive, you know?
You know, I wonder if anyone were to develop something along the lines of Twilight, just don't balk at me yet. But, you know, something that's like set in present day, where you're actually, you know, a witch from like Sacred Circle, or you're like, you know, a vampire from Vampire Diaries. I mean, something that's current. I don't want them to develop a Vampire Diaries game. Let me just clarify. But I mean, mm-hmm. you don't ever see something that is present day. You're right. I mean, Fallout is somewhere in the future, maybe, that has kind of a retro swing. And then Mass Effect is obviously like way off in the future.
I mean, there are systems. Scott and I are gigantic nerds that played in the World of Darkness RPG system.
Yeah.
Which has like mages and vampires and werewolves and all this stuff. And every game they've released for it's pretty much been a turd, except for one of them.
Yeah, I mean, that one good one was a really good one. And I always wonder why there's not more stuff like that, because that totally used like a RPG system.
Well, I mean, it is an RPG. I mean, all they have to do is take the it's the same thing that Skyrim or, you know, any of the D&D games are doing. They're just taking a tabletop system and going like, all right, how do we program this? How do we make this programmatic so that, you know, you can level a certain way and you can have fight mechanics and stuff like that? I don't know why. I think the World of Darkness just isn't maybe popular enough in video games, but it seems like it could be. I don't know.
But why not have a role playing game that is in 2012?
No, I agree.
Well, the Kickstarter.
That's what these were.
It's called Grand Theft Auto 4.
I think there is. What is that MMO that's coming out? The Secret World or something? Isn't that what that's about?
Yes. Yeah, it's about It's about secret organizations and Illuminati and all that fun stuff.
But it's a MMO still. That's the problem. I mean,
that's a problem. That's my barrier to entry.
Yeah. MMO.
So, Scott,
your summer game pile.
Oh, summer game pile.
I mentioned this, by the way, on the other podcast, and I could not get the name right, so Ash had to correct me. But but I love the initiative.
I'm building a brand here. So this week's Summer Game Pile game is Rayman Origins, which I think at the time, even when it came out, I think I told you guys it would be $20 in 6 months, and it was $20 in 6 months.
Yeah.
So I picked it up. I played the demo, and it was awesome when it came out because, I mean, I guess I should full disclosure that I'm a huge platforming fan. So my only beef with platformers is that I don't really subscribe to a lot of the tenets of Japanese gaming. Like, you know, you have to collect everything and you have to beat the speed trial time. And like, once you beat the game, you have to go through and play the whole game again. You know, like, I'm not really into that stuff. But Rayman Origins takes that platforming stuff and kind of like scales it back a little bit into something that, in my opinion, is a bit more enjoyable. So Rayman Origins is a platformer. The real sort of allure to the game is that it's got really awesome artwork. It's sort of like a faux 2D, 3D kind of thing, but it all looks like it's like hand-drawn. So it's really got like an interesting, like, it's got a very unique feel to it. And all the music is really good too. And that's kind of like where all the thoughtfulness went into the game, I think. Because pretty much after that, it's like a normal platformer. And of course, you know, there are things to collect. There are speedruns to do, but you don't have to, like, the speedruns aren't ridiculous. And like the collection quests don't require you to collect every single thing in a level. You just really have to like meet a threshold. And once cool. you, and like, and you really don't even have to do that if you're not interested. You can really just play through the game and have fun. And I actually think there's a co-op thing too. And they mix up like all of the levels, like all the worlds have like a really good, unique style to them, like a separate style from the other worlds. They kind of like spice up the levels with some side scroller, like flying shooting, like old school style side scroller shooters, like where you're flying. I can't remember what those games are, but some of the boss levels do that. And I guess really the point is that it's like a breath of fresh air. Like if all you've basically had available to you were, was like Kirby and Mario, this is something different from a different studio, from like a different mind of people to play. If you're like, I mean, if you're a platforming fan, you need to play this game. That's really the bottom line.
Cool. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's great. And the music gets stuck in your head. It's kind
of
funny.
You know what
yeah.
I think broke me of my love of platformers? I was one of those idiots that in Mario 64 tried to collect all the stars. And it was so infuriating and just so repetitive. I don't think I ever wanted to platform again.
That's the, like I said, I mean, that's the problem with, you know, things that occur in Japanese games, like, I feel like are not appealing to Western gamers anymore now that there are Western games.
Yeah.
You know?
And Rayman Origins.
Yeah, Rayman Origins feels like sort of a more westernized platformer. And they don't try to like steal things from Mario. There's not like power-ups and like invincibility and stuff like that. It's just a different platformer.
It is a Western studio, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was Ubisoft that put the game out. Yeah. But like, it was like their art. They have like, when the game starts up, they brand it as like an art studio game.
You said Ubisoft correctly. That's what she just thumbs up.
Oh, sorry.
That was correct. Good job.
All right, yay me. Grammar.
Awesome.
Cool. Yeah, so that's Summer Game Pile.
Well, I wanted to follow up. Last week we talked about Max Payne 3 with Ryan, who had, I think, completed the game by the time, and he's supposed to have a review up on our site any day now, I guess. Any I don't day. Know. But I've gotten a little further, and I also played a little bit of the multiplayer. The multiplayer is pretty straight up normal, you know, deathmatch, team deathmatch kind of stuff. There's some other objectives that you can unlock after playing X amount of multiplayer. You know, you level through the multiplayer mechanic while you're playing. Yeah. It's pretty standard and honestly pretty boring, and it's not going to keep me playing the game very much. It's fun, you know, in a sense, but like, I'm kind of over that, you know, Unreal game style playing. It just doesn't really matter to me.
Well, here's the problem. What's the main gameplay mechanic of the Max Payne game franchise?
The bullet time thing?
Yeah.
So when somebody else goes into bullet time and you're in multiplayer, you actually go into bullet time too. kind of. There you go. Then you're like shooting it, but it's off-putting because all of a sudden you'll be in bullet time and you're like shooting really slow while you're trying to run. So it's a little weird.
It's a game mechanic that doesn't translate to multiplayer. That's the problem. No, so it just doesn't. Comes off being like Uncharted multiplayer.
You know what it feels like? It feels like, and I think this is with a lot of games that would have multiplayer, it feels like there is some pre-programmed package of multiplayer out there that somebody made, and then all you do is just grab it and you just like put it on top of your game and you're like, there's our pre-made multiplayer, and they just skin it with whatever game you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels and looks exactly like, I mean, this could be any game in multiplayer, honestly. There's nothing in it that makes me feel like, yeah, it's Max Payne. It's just like, it's just a run and gun. It's really vanilla. I don't know. Isn't going to keep me coming back. There's also an arcade mode, which basically lets you go back through the chapters and unlock stuff, and you earn money, which you can buy in-game items, I think, for the single player, I believe, or maybe it's multiplayer. There's timed settings and things like that. It's okay. Again, not super interesting to me. I don't really care that much about the mode, but it's fun to be able to go back and try to, you know, outscore somebody, I guess. It all ties into the social club, so you see everybody else's scores.
Oh, cool. Did you finish the campaign, the single player?
So let's talk about that. I'm on chapter 10 of 17.
Okay. How long is it taking you to get there?
Not super long. I'm like 6 hours of actual gameplay, and it's not a really long game. It's pretty short. Here's my issue with it. I've played 10 out of 17 chapters, And I'm not even an Xbox achievements guy. Like, it's not a huge deal to me, but I just look, because usually I'll see how much I've progressed in the game kind of with it. I've unlocked one thing.
Seriously?
One.
That would drive me crazy.
6 hours of gameplay, 10 out of 17 chapters, and I've unlocked one item inside of my achievements in the Xbox.
Half of them are probably multiplayer achievements.
They are. Half of them are multiplayer. The other half are arcade achievements. And then there's like 5 for in-game single player.
Got to buy that Rockstar Season Pass, man. That's what they're pushing.
That, man. I saw that, and it pissed me off. And I don't get angry about that stuff usually. And I saw it, and I was like, really, one? I've unlocked one? I've played over half of your game, and I've unlocked one item.
I secretly feel like achievements are really what the developer cares about in their game.
I
feel like it's very telling what the achievements are. Like, I feel like it's a reflection of the people that made the game.
Yeah. I will say the story's gotten better. And the gameplay's a little more interesting now. I still feel like I'm just watching a movie and then shooting guns for 5 minutes, and then watching a movie and then shooting guns for 5 minutes. Like, there's really not much to the game as a whole. But it's good. I'm enjoying it still. So, you know, I'm going to finish it and beat it. But the moment I saw that achievements thing, I was like, wow, so I'm going to finish single player, and then I'm going to sell this game and never touch it again, because that's ridiculous.
You're going to end up with like 25 achievement points.
It's
stupid. You're definitely not making me ever want to play this, because I was kind of on the fence already.
I liked the old Max Paynes, and I wanted to enjoy this because I do enjoy Rockstar's like story mechanics usually. And it really just feels like Rockstar kind of didn't put a ton of story into it and just made a shooting game. And it's kind of boring, so I don't know. Ryan liked it a little bit more than I did, but even he admits that it's a little bit like cinematic and then shoot, cinematic then shoot. So, but that is it. Just a short one. I just wanted to catch up that I did try out multiplayer and I started playing through it. It could be Call of Duty. It could be Call of Duty, the you know, Max Payne version or whatever. It doesn't feel any different. So, there you go.
Until they add a zombie mode.
Matter of time.
Yeah, can only we? A matter of time.
All right, well, let's take a quick break, come back with our question of the week. All right, we're back with the question of the week. The question this week, in honor of our brand new theme song, was what song or artist would you like to have for your own personal theme song, and why?
Awesome question.
I'm going to start off and say that mine is Denver the Last Dinosaur. Would you guys like me to... Hillary. We were talking about classic theme songs, and this one kept popping into my head many episodes ago, and that was the theme song to an 80s cartoon called Denver the Last Dinosaur. and it went something like this.
Oh, no.
Denver, the last dinosaur. He's my friend and a whole lot more. Denver, wow. The last dinosaur. So that's what I would pick. That would be my theme song every time.
Are
I
you
walk
serious?
Yeah, there's something magical about it, and I'm sticking to that. Yes. So next time we cross paths, please sing that to me, and I will be.
There you go.
There you go, Denver. Wow. So let's start out with an actual answer from our friend Mr. Cohen, who is @Maliflam on Twitter, and he says Danny Elfman. From the first note, you can always tell any Elfman track, and it's always so good. I can definitely see people picking this quite frequently because Danny Elfman's a popular composer. So,
hell yeah.
Do you think Cohen walks around with the Breakfast Machine song in his head?
is that the Pee Wee Herman?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was the one that immediately came to my mind for him when he said Danny Elfman. I was like, the Pee Wee Herman song.
Yeah. Because it's an
awesome
thinking
like
song.
Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
I've had those days where it's been a breakfast song day, so I can totally relate to Cohen's response.
Yes.
Indeed.
So, Scott, what is your answer?
Oh, my answer is an artist, and because I'm a sucker for inspirational 80s rock tunes, I'm just
oh shit.
I'm going to go with Vince DiCola as my artist.
the Transformers guy.
Yeah, I'm going with You've Got the Touch.
Yeah.
I'm going with Dare. I'm going with Hearts on Fire from Rocky IV.
Yeah.
I'm taking all of that.
Good for you, man. That's some inspirational stuff.
I'm going to be fucking fired up all day.
Yeah, you will.
Yeah.
Yeah, you will. By the way, all Transformers and G.I. Joe cartoons streaming on Netflix right now.
Thank
you. Nice.
I've been watching the G.I. Joe series. So Rita Winslow @Ninrak says, probably Emil Ottom's Dead is the New Alive because I'm working myself to death to bring things to glorious new life.
Cool.
What is this?
Actually, check that out. And it's actually pretty cool. So
she attached a YouTube video that we can throw in the show notes.
We will.
Well, right on.
We will do that.
Nice.
So Hillary, do you have an answer?
Uh-oh.
I'm really torn on this one. Yeah. I would have to say no. Are you serious? You obviously don't know me very well.
You said I'm really torn. How do I know that?
Oh, I get it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. No. That was what, like 10 years ago? Anyway, I would have to say there's a French like techno house ambient band called Telepop Music. And they are kind of known, kind of not known. I don't know. Okay. They've been around for a long time. But, yeah, I would pick them for my band of choice, I guess.
Is that music for the K? M-U-I-S?
Yeah, it's with a K. Telepop Music with a K. Yeah. But if it has to be, like, composer-ish, I would go with, I don't know, John Williams might be cool, but there's a whole lot of going on.
There are, yeah.
Cymbals crashing.
That is true.
So you don't. This is like a down tempo kind of band, right? This telepop music, this one song that I found on YouTube,
which I will judge their entire catalog.
Yes,
I know, exactly. Right? I don't know. Telepop music is awesome, but maybe some. Is it Jesper Kidd, the guy who does the Assassin's Creed music, which is phenomenal?
Oh
yeah. I don't know. Music is so hard because I have I change my mind too much with music. I just love it too much. All different kinds. Or the guy who did the Revolutionary Road soundtrack is pretty.
That's why we ask the tough questions on this podcast, because we make you choose one.
I can't ever choose that. It's bad news.
Tough questions.
But yeah, check out Telepop Music, people out there.
Yeah, I've actually
good stuff.
Do.
So Justin Banks, Midtown 583, says, Weird Al, the king of parody songs. I'm sure he could work his magic for a theme for me. That's pretty brilliant.
I would hate to see what Weird Al created for me.
He was on an episode of 30 Rock recently, and he was
really
funny. It was really
good.
He sang the 30 Rock song. He put words to it.
Here's a fun fact, too. If you ever have an opportunity to watch UHF with the commentary on, it is amazing, his memory of things.
Really?
Like, they did the commentary, like, whatever, 10 years after the movie came out for the DVD, and he can remember, like, the names of the places they went to and the people that he met and all the locations they filmed at in, like, the town that they were filming in. It's so bizarre.
Your knowledge of UHF is just crazy. Staggering.
Yes, yeah. It is.
I love that movie. Come on.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man.
It so, is classic. Surprise.
Okay.
Crazy Jeffy, is it?
Yeah.
Says, yep. To be the best by Tenacious D because it's the D. Okay.
Solid.
That's the Jack Black. That's Jack Black, right?
Yep.
Yes. Can't go wrong with that.
He was actually on Leno last night.
Oh, was he?
Jack Black being.
Is he have a movie? Yeah. They just put an album.
No, yeah, it's called Rise of the Phoenix.
Yeah.
And it's not spelled Phoenix the normal way. It's Phoenix, I think, and yeah. Rise with a Z.
Z.
Yeah, and it has a very phallic cover, which is interesting too.
It's
actually hilarious.
The release announcement video for that's pretty brilliant. Dave Grohl's in it, and it's funny. So
awesome.
It has girls, therefore it's brilliant.
No, Dave Grohl is
Dave Grohl.
Not girls.
Oh. Oh, you mean a Foo Fighters fame?
Yes.
Love him.
He's
love
awesome.
Him. Cool.
All right.
So last up, or should I do mine? I'll do
yeah,
mine.
Yeah, do yours.
Do yours.
Yeah.
Mine, I'm going artist as well, and it's probably because when I moved up here, this album had like come out pretty recently, and I did listen to it a bunch when I was walking around. I was like, I'd totally just be jacked up if I walked around to this all the time. And it's M83, which is also
a
French artist.
That. I love that. Midnight City.
Midnight City, yeah. That's the new single that just came out. But yeah, M83. Anything that he's done from like Before the Dawn Heals Us on, I could totally walk my life around to. I'd sound epic. Everything would just sound epic. It'd be like massive like things going on around me constantly. Buildings falling down.
What about the creepy songs where the girl is just talking in the background?
Yeah, yeah.
Are those a part of your soundtrack
as
well?
Yeah, man. The whole thing.
Oh, okay.
I'm good.
Excellent.
I really feel like you and Hillary have bonded on this podcast. You agreed on two things.
It's weird.
I know. You know why? It's because on the other podcast, I met someone from Nebraska and realized that I get along with East Coast more than
Midwest
country.
Mid country.
Poor Nate.
Poor Nate. Such a nice guy.
No, I actually really like him, but yeah. Yeah.
You just can't get over Nebraska.
I have family from there, so yeah. I have additional.
Fair enough.
Additional
you have a stake in the matter.
Judgment
without an E. Thank you.
So finally, we have Prison Break 2438, who says...
Say it like a robot.
Prison Break... this just started. Sorry, I clicked something and the music started playing. It said, Worn Out Passport because it makes me feel adventurous, and it's by a band called The Copyrights. It's a punk.
I have to say, that is a great name for a song.
Worn Out Passport?
Yeah.
It is.
Because I know my passport's pretty worn out, but it makes me think, oh yeah, I can put a whole story together just from that name.
I'm kind of jealous that your passport's worn out, whereas mine has a layer of dust on it.
Crisp. It's crisp. Mine is crisp. Never been used.
All right. Well, that about wraps it up for episode 61 of the Rated NA podcast. Huge thanks to Jimmy Henson and...
Yes. We will
for
continue
creating
thinking.
Our theme song for us. We
Yay!
Owe you big time, sir.
Big and, giant circles.
BigGiantCircles.com. There'll be links to it and everything. And we will consistently plug him in every episode because we owe him big time.
Super
and we
awesome.
Will go out with the nerd appropriate theme song in its entirety.
Yay.
Yay. Cheers.
Go music.
Sweet. Weird ashes humping something.